a mostly nice day across Wisconsin, but as a weak system moves through, it's once again going to have the chance of some scattered rain, maybe even a thunderstorm here or there, again, mostly to the north, but seasonal temperatures. Luke, I was reminded that I needed to be reschooled in the difference between seasonal and seasonable, and I realized I just used it wrong. So here's your pop quiz, Luke. You know the difference. No,
okay, I don't think good. I do. I don't think I know the difference.
I'll tell you. Seasonal would be something that's, you know, in season, like, you know, pumpkins are seasonal to Halloween, but seasonable is you're right for that particular season. So temps are seasonable throughout the year if they're in the right season. So, ladies and gentlemen, you've just had today's moment of nerdness with Pat Kreitel. Let's turn now to the elections that are 83 days away now. So 84 days away. And let's join up with Dick Ausman from Lac des Flambeaux, candidate for Congress in the 7th Congressional District, challenging the incumbent Republican Tom Tiffany. Dick, nice to have you here. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Pat. Appreciate the opportunity to be here.
We've already had some to say about Tom Tiffany's record, and we'll certainly be getting back into that. But as I've done with previous congressional candidates, I think the candidate, especially in these really expensive times of getting advertising out, it's tough to first introduce yourself to voters. So at least here for the nice folks listening here, they get to hear directly from you. So give folks an introduction as to, you know, who you are and what's your story.
Sure. Well, I was born and raised in Merrill, Wisconsin. You know, my background, when I was 7, my dad passed away. My mom had 6 kids. They both grew up on farms, by the way. And my dad passed away, 6 kids in Merrill, no insurance. You know, my mom worked in a department store. She picked up selling Avon products. She baked bread. I delivered around the neighborhood. We got food in white boxes from the county home. She rented out my sister's bedroom to a student at the nursing college to make ends meet. She really defined who I am today, make things happen. So, you know, I was born and raised in the middle of this district. I've had a home in Lac des Flambeaux for the past 25 years. So this has been my home for most of my life.
And what have you done career-wise prior to deciding you wanted to make this run for Congress?
I've been a publisher for decades. Started out delivering newspapers for a struggling weekly student newspaper in Madison, Wisconsin. And that's where I got bit by the publishing bug, the media bug. 8 years later, when I left that paper, it was the 20th largest daily newspaper in the state by circulation. I then moved to Milwaukee, where I created the first alternative weekly newspaper in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Within 3 years, we won the Milwaukee Press Club Award for best feature writing in the state. My career progressed professionally. I became a leading executive in one of the largest publishing companies in the world, VNU, based out of Amsterdam. While there, my publication won 2 Jesse H. Neal Awards. They're considered the Pulitzer Prize of the business press. And, and after the pandemic, I was about to start 2 media brands of my own. I've made a lot of money for shareholders. A private owner, and I know how to do this, so I'll just make money for myself. But then I realized Tom Tiffany was going to run on hose. I said to myself, that simply can't happen. So that's why I'm here today.
The public end of it, I found to be rather fascinating, because when we think of, you know, the publishing, we think of things we would see on a newsstand every day, for those of us old enough to remember what a newsstand is. But the fact of the matter is there's entire industries devoted to publishing, you know, within industry, within the business world, things that, you know, a lot of us will never see, but the kinds of things that, like you said, are in demand, especially if they are quality publications.
Yeah, especially, you know, I was mostly involved with business to business information. Businesses need information on how to run their businesses, what are future trends and things like that. I published Training Magazine. It was leading magazine in the country for how you develop your workforce. I was also publisher of Presentations Magazine. It was a leading magazine in the country as to effective communication skills and the technology that helps support that. I expanded the presentations into Russia and Japan. Russia was interesting because they spoke a little English. Japan, they didn't speak any English. I used translators to create that. And I started to joke, I'm not a funny person, but my experience in Japan, I figure, you know, once I get to Congress, I'll be able to work with Republicans, because even though we don't speak the same language, we'll be able to make things happen.
Well, it's, and I want to pick up on that, the communication skills that make for a smooth operating workforce seems rather, that is the antithesis of what we have in Congress today. We have a workforce that is dysfunctional, that has poor communication skills, because I guess if we'll liken it to business, you know, the two parties are like two different, you know, departments within a company, or two different divisions that, you know, have issues of trust and, you know, mistrust and miscommunication. So you've seen from the, you know, the business world, how you go about fixing that. I have always said that, you know, politics and business are not apples to apples. So I'm asking a bit of an unfair question, but if you were going to take some of the skills you've written about and published, you know, to Congress, you know, if you were their consultant, what are some of the things you'd want to do in Congress to fix that?
You have to talk. You know, the number one, publishing presentations was one of the greatest gifts I've had in my life, because the art of effective communication, when things break down, it's typically, and this is in personal, if you think about if you have a fight with your spouse or whether it's business-wise, things break down because of lack of communication, miscommunication, no communication. And if you're not communicating, nothing's going to happen. And what's been fascinating is, you know, I put more than 14,000 miles on my truck since I started this quest in May. And as I'm meeting with people at fairs and parades and festivals and farm events, what upsets them, no matter what their political stripe, is folks don't seem to know how to compromise. They see no compromise. I mean, when I grew, you know, the politics I watched of 45, 50 years ago, you know, you compromised. Everyone gave up a little bit to move something forward for the betterment of everybody. And everybody's pretty frustrated because they're not talking, they're not compromising, they're not trying to work together. It's either it's all Republican or it's all Democrat. And if it's not, there's no meeting in the middle, there's no meeting in the middle. And that doesn't help things.
Well, especially when there's, you know, less incentive than ever to talk to one another, less incentive than ever to compromise. And, you know, my own view on that is, even before Citizens United, this was true, but more so afterwards, there is now so much financial reason to not, you know, compromise, to not communicate with each other. And I don't just mean, you know, campaign contributions. I mean, you know, the power that you get if you're rule, if you're the majority party, if you win the most elections. You know, back in the day when members of Congress were getting a, you know, a congressional salary and, you know, not much more for campaign contributions, you didn't have these multi-million dollar races. You know, you didn't have this, you know, financial incentive for gridlock. And now we do. And I'm not saying it can't be overcome. We certainly saw in the bipartisan infrastructure bill that, you know, things can happen. But Dick, if you're elected to Congress, do you feel like you can facilitate some of that despite all the big money interests that are working against good communication?
Absolutely. You know, I don't have all the answers. What I've done in life, the reason I've been successful is I've surrounded myself with people who are really good at what they do. I go out, I search for answers. I'm trying to find out what the opposite viewpoints are. When I'm at a fair, you know, I'm talking to people who have a Trump hat or Trump jacket on because I want to understand where they're coming from. You know, people would tend to call me a people person. I enjoy talking with people. Again, I'm not expecting them to tell me what I want to hear. I want to hear what they have to say. And then, you know, as a leader, you process all of that. And what I've found is when you get good people in a room, the right answer typically bubbles up. If everybody has the common goal, the common good in mind, you know, sometimes it doesn't. And that's when you, as a leader, you have to step up and then you make a decision. But, you know, right now it's about politics. I mean, I think back in the Obama administration when Mitch McConnell said, I don't care what you do, I'm going to block it. I mean, Obama could have come up with a cure for cancer. And at that point, they would have said, well, no, we're not going to do it. You know, that's just it, they've forgotten that this is about the people. We are there. They go to they go to Washington to represent the best interests of the people, not their future political careers. And unfortunately, all people think about is what's going to get me elected in the next cycle. You know, that thought's never going to cross my mind. I'll be there as long as the people want me there to be helping them. And every decision I will ever make will be what's best for the constituents of the 7th District and ultimately what's best for the interests of the citizens of the United States.
We're talking to Dick Ostman, candidate for Congress in the 7th Congressional District all across northern Wisconsin and dipping down into some of western Wisconsin as well. It is a district. It's been redistricted, obviously, but in its previous form, it was represented by Dave Obie for, you know, more than 40 years in Congress. And it was at times a solidly blue collar Democratic area, not just from Congressman Obie, but from the legislators that represented that area as well. The pendulum swung mightily starting in 2010. And it is a, you know, right now a heavily rated Republican district. Dick, you know that. You know that when you got into the race. What is your point of view on whether that is a permanent state of redness for the 7th Congressional District and northern Wisconsin overall?
I don't think it's a permanent state at all. You have to go before David Obie, Alvin Iokonski, who was a good friend of our family. He was a Republican. He represented the district for 31 years. But if you put his accomplishments, the civil rights, voting rights, introducing the GI Bill, if you had to label him, you'd label him as a Democrat. In fact, I had said something about him being a family friend. I wanted to make sure I didn't misquote, so I was looking for information on him and ran across his obituary. And in there, he's quoted as saying, well, really, I'm a Democrat domestically. I'm a Republican internationally. And then so you have Obie for 43 years. It's only been the past 12 years that what I would say this nonsense has been reigning where, again, it's all about the politics. It's about being elected. It's about a party. It's not about what's doing best for the people. And ultimately, I think Obie and Iokonski were out there doing what was best for the people.
And another one who represented that part of the state prior to Obie as well was Mel Laird, who again, you know, would be considered, if not a moderate Republican, you know, a liberal Republican, you know, something that only existed, you know, once upon a time. But again, it's that common sense, you know, value that you have throughout the district that you feel like you can help people gain back. So you mentioned the miles you put on your truck. So I imagine even though you didn't have a primary opponent, you've hardly been running this just out of lack of flambeau.
No, I've been all around this district so many times. There's a few counties I haven't spent as much time in, Florence Forest, but I plan to be making that up. I bought an old school bus that has a platform, and as we move forward, I'm looking forward to taking that, using it I use it in parades and at festivals and such, helps with the visibility. But, you know, and you mentioned Melvin Laird, and that actually—
Yeah, let me come back to that after the break, since we're coming up against that, because I do want to ask you more about, you know, the history of this district, and it's not as right-wing as people would like to think. Dick Ostman is our guest. We'll pick up right after the break. This is Up North News.